welcome to the Creative Pen Podcast. I'm Joanna Penn, thriller author and professional speaker, bringing you interviews, inspiration and information on writing, publishing options and marketing ideas for your book. You can find the episode show notes, your free Author 2.0 blueprint and lots more information at thecreativepen.com. And that's pen with a double N. And here's the show. Hi everyone, I'm Joanna Penn and this is episode number 223 of the podcast, and it's 28th of June 2015 as I record this. So today we have a great interview with Susan K. Quinn, and we talk about self-doubt and fear of judgment and comparisonitis and lots of other juicy things, and get quite honest about some of those things that we all suffer. I get quite a lot of emails about self-doubt, and I always have to say, look, we all feel it. That's just the way it goes. Go and read Anne Lamott's Bird by Bird if you want to, you know, that she talks about it, you know, in the best way. So anyway, we also go into branding and tips on organizing your marketing, which and one of the tips I have stolen from Susan because it's so useful. So yeah, check that out. First, a few things. So first of all, thanks so much for all the wonderful tweets and emails about the Q&A show. I was a little worried that it was too much of me and my opinions, but it seemed you all enjoyed it, and I'm getting lots more questions emailed to me to add to the very big list. I think what's good is that it's very clear that most people have the same questions, so hopefully I'll hit on everybody's eventually, and I will definitely be doing more of those shows, although I have some really interesting interviews coming up. A couple of other really exciting things for you today, and I absolutely genuinely am excited about this. So I am part of a star-studded lineup for the Self-Publishing Summit, it's very cool when one is on the program with names that make one feel sort of, yeah, starstruck. Clearly it's Sunday morning and I don't have much vocabulary left. But in terms of the Self-Publishing Summit, it's free if you listen live or in the first 72 hours. So it's basically free if you listen to each episode in the first 3 days. It's $97 US to get access to all the replays. So go to thecreativepen.com/summit, S-U-M-M-I-T, thecreativepen.com/summit. So I'm speaking about my writing process, if you'd like another hour of listening to me talking about my opinions. So check that out. And I'm speaking alongside James Altucher. So on the sales page, I'm next to James Altucher. If you don't know him, he's super. He's one of those bloggers and authors I really love. There's also Jack Canfield, which if you've heard me talk about the books I recommend, The Success Principles is on my desk. I went to Jack Canfield live recently, and his stuff has really changed my life. Also Brian Tracy, another self-help guru, plus other people more in our niche, Joseph Michael, the Scrivener coach, Jeff Goines, Steve Scott, who's been on the show before. Also Pat Flynn from Smart Passive Income, Jamie Tardy from Eventual Millionaire, Michael Port, who talks about making lots of money with speaking, Hal Elrod of The Miracle Morning, Russell Brunson, whose book .com Secrets I'm actually reading right now and it's excellent, also Chris Ducker, who's been on the show about outsourcing and VAs, and John Lee Dumas, who makes, I would say Dumas, like Alexandre Dumas, but I think it's Dumas. Anyway, he makes 6 figures a month with podcasting. So seriously, you want to listen to these people. I think the balance of the stuff is non-fiction focused, but I'm certainly talking about fiction, and there's quite a lot of people who are in that kind of area. Also, I think for anybody, for all of us, focusing on the business side of being an author, this is a very good, it's either free, so it's not really an investment of money, but it's investment of your time, or the $97. It's a very, very good deal. The summit starts July the 12th and runs until July 23rd in 2015. So that's pretty soon, just a couple of weeks' time. And so register, you know, basically register ASAP and clear some listening time. I will definitely be listening, and so I'll probably talk about it next week as well. So check that out at thecreativepen.com/summit, S-U-M-M-I-T. So that's one exciting thing. Another exciting thing. I wonder if you think I think everything's exciting, and I do. I was saying to my husband this morning, I really, really love what I do. I just love it. I'm so super happy. On other things that might be useful for you, the webinars I've been doing lately have had amazing feedback, and the one with Dan Blank a few weeks ago, people were saying it was the best webinar ever. It certainly was jam-packed, full of value, and I really enjoyed it and wrote notes, and Dan is super brilliant. But I have a new one for you that if you missed the others, this one, or indeed if you joined me on the others, you will enjoy this one. So Thursday, 16th of July, Nick Stevenson will be doing a 90-minute webinar for my audience on how to find your first 10k readers. And so Nick's advice certainly helped me supercharge my fiction email list, and we'll be talking about, both of us, how we make a six-figure income and why Amazon is not a bookstore, how to drive readers to your books on autopilot, why social media doesn't work and what to do instead, how to turn casual readers into super fans, and much more, plus Q&A with us at the end. So while the summit I was talking about is more of a passive sort of just listen to stuff, if you come on the webinar, you can ask your questions live. And of course, if you can't come live on the webinar, you can get the replay for free. So you can get that, or you can register for that at thecreativepen.com/10k webinar. So that's the number 10, so 10k webinar. And the links will be on the show notes as well. So you can register for your free place on the webinar, and yes, there are no limits. So don't worry about taking someone else's place. I get some lovely emails from people who go, "Oh, I don't want to take someone else's place, but it's okay. It's the internet, so it's just abundant." So thecreativepen.com/10k webinar. All right, so I hope those two things are really useful. I mean, I think both of these are brilliant. So, yes. Okay, what else? Personal stuff, because I've had a pretty big week. It feels like this week, you know, some weeks you feel like nothing gets done, and then some weeks are just loads happens. So first of all, I had a big fangirly moment when I met John Connolly at Crime in the Court this week. His Charlie Parker books are some of my favourites, and actually a very big influence on my London Psychic series, in that he has a detective. His books are set in Maine in the US, but he's actually Irish, and his detective kind of had, there's a lot of supernatural stuff in his books. So anyway, if you haven't checked out Charlie Parker by John Connolly, check them out. And you can find pictures of Crime in the Court shenanigans, because it was basically a whole load of crime authors drinking way too much wine, which is tends to be what British authors seem to do together. I think the Americans are much more restrained and professional, but Brits do like a drink. You can see the pictures of my JF Penn Facebook page, which is at facebook.com/JF Penn author. That's F for Francis. And the pictures are dated June 26, 2015. So if you want to see some amusing pictures as well, the one with me and John Connolly, I'm just beaming like an idiot. But it's lovely when you meet people you've kind of hero worshipped for years. Another thing that happened this week, How to Make a Living with Your Writing, came out on all ebook stores. And it was so funny, because when I actually published them, you know, it used to take about 4 hours to publish ebooks, and now at the Amazon publishing process, and took about literally an hour. It was amazing. So it is on all ebook stores, coming in print soon. And thank you to everyone who bought on day one and made it an instant bestseller in entrepreneurship and authorship. So I hope you all find it useful. So that you can find all the buy links at thecreativepen.com/makealiving. And again, all the notes on the show notes of the page. Also, another big thing this week, it's just a mental week, it's crazy. The audiobooks for Gates of Hell and One Day in New York came out, which are super duper. And One Day in New York is my first male narration. Very odd to hear my words in an American male voice, but also very cool. And Gates of Hell is by Veronica Jaeger, who's done the rest of the Arcane series in Morgan's voice, which is super. I have an interview next week with Jeffrey Kafer, who narrates One Day in New York, so you'll be able to hear his sexy voice. And I'll also play an excerpt, so that's coming next week. Right, the new regular segment, which is, what are you doing while listening to the show? And I've been saving all the tweets with all the pictures on Twitter. So if you go to twitter.com/thecreativepen and click on favourites, you'll be able to see them. I've saved them all there. So Philip Harris says, I listen to the show while I'm out running or at work, and it helps me get through those why am I bothering to be a writer moments. Oh, Philip. of course we love being writers, but no, I know some days we all have bad days, so I'm so glad that the podcast helps with yours. And Mike says, I listen to your show while coding our analytics app at the Huffington Post. I help editors decide what to publish and when, and you help me where to publish and how. That's awesome. I love that. Brilliant. Percival Constantine says he's listening in Kagoshima, Japan. I dodge ash from this volcano while driving and listening. And he sent a picture of the volcano, which is cool. And actually, yesterday we watched a nature documentary about Japan and about a volcanic island. I think that was it, which is cool. David Styles is sitting on the rank in his black London cab and has a picture out the windscreen of the black cab in front of him. And David, I could be in your cab one day because I'm in London too, so you never know. Steve Troer says, listening to Joanna's dulcet tones. Thank you, Steve. By the way, we all hate our voice. Can I just say that? Like, I don't like my voice, but, I do this because I hope you find it useful. But it's if you're thinking of starting a podcast and you don't like your voice, don't worry. None of us do. Anyway, Steve is listening on a sunny drive home through the Cotswolds, which is lovely. My dad lives in the Cotswolds, so there you go. John Slater, listening while doing his daily walk, and sent a picture of a deer, which is lovely. And a walking theme. I'm glad everyone's doing exercise. I'm just sitting down right now. L.E. Thomas Jr. is listening while hiking in North Georgia and sent a picture of the hiking trail. And Madeline Deste has it queued up for her walk to work this morning. Olivia Helling says, listening while testing ebook files, and she loved the Q&A. Yes, testing ebook files, I did that this week, and although I'm really happy about having how to make a living with your writing out, testing ebook files is possibly the worst part of the process. Luckily, it doesn't take too much time. Scott King says, this week I'm listening while shooting dragons, while photographing a dragon game for a client, and sent a picture of the dragon game he's taking a picture of, Scott being a photographer. So that's very cool. And of course, Game of Thrones, I binged on the series, absolutely love it. Gotta love dragons. So That is it. So tweet me at The Creative Pen, or you can email what you're doing while listening to the show. I really love it. I've just really enjoyed the feedback and the fact that people are actually listening. That's marvellous. So today, this podcast episode is sponsored by 99 Designs, and you can go to 99designs.com/Joanna for your free power pack upgrade. I think that one of the best uses of a marketing budget is a professional cover that resonates with your target market. And you can get book covers at 99 Designs. You submit your project, and then lots of designers submit options, and you get to choose the one you like. There's no risk with 99 Designs, as you only pay when you're happy with what is created. And you get lots of choice with multiple designers submitting work. You can also get web page design for WordPress, social media banners and headers, as well as posters, postcards, flyers, email newsletter templates, t-shirts, mugs, and much more. You can also get custom illustrations and other graphics, and I've used 99 Designs myself for a custom illustration of the Key to the Gates of Hell, which features on the cover of the ebook, print book, and indeed the audiobook, and also inside the print book, so multiple uses. You can get a Power Pack upgrade, which gives your project more chance of getting noticed with bold headers, highlighted backgrounds, and featured listing by going to 99designs.com/Joanna, J-O-A-N-N-A. So this corporate sponsorship pays for the hosting and transcription, but my time in producing the show is primarily sponsored by you guys. So a big thank you to all the people supporting on Patreon, and thanks in particular this week to new supporters Philip Harris and Maria Maggio Fisher. And you can support the show at patreon.com/thecreativepen. Or of course, you can buy my books. And once again, I've given you loads of links in this intro today. So remember, you can always find the show notes if you go to thecreativepen.com/podcasts and go to the episode number, and this is episode 223, and you'll be able to find all the links and also the transcription. So I hope that is useful. All right, let's get on with the interview with Susan. Hi everyone, I'm Joanna Penn from thecreativepen.com, and today I'm here with Susan K. Quinn. Welcome, Susan.
Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, and thank you for coming back. I should tell everyone this is our second take because my tech failed, so I'm so sorry, but it was fascinating, so we can do it all over again.
Yes, it was very enjoyable the first time, but my answers might change, and I hope I don't get in trouble for that.
Oh. Not at all.
We shall see.
Okay, so just a little introduction. Susan is a former rocket scientist, now best-selling speculative fiction author. And today we're talking about her super book, The Indie Author Survival Guide. So Susan, just tell us a bit more about that rocket scientist and how you got into writing.
Well, I wrote when I was a kid, but then I decided I had to get all serious and become an engineer and a scientist, which I did, and I got a bunch of degrees, culminating in a PhD. So I ended up doing research. I was working for NASA and worked on global warming, and it was all great stuff. I absolutely adored my work. And but when I had kids and that came along, I decided I would stay home for a little while, and I always planned to go back to engineering. And then a funny thing happened along the way where I picked up the pen again and started writing and was just thoroughly addicted and could not stop. And it was a very transformational time for me because there was this creative side to my being that had not really had expression. And, you know, engineering and science can be creative, but it also has this side to it that is very distrustful of the arts. And so that I had kind of suppressed that. And when it came out, it was like, you know, opening up a fire hose, there was no stopping it. And I've been writing ever since and decided, you know, I really need to bring the two sides of myself together and be more integrated. And that's why there's a lot of tech stuff in my writing, but also very much the heart of it. My science fiction is really science fiction with heart because I like the human side of that. So I'm happy with it now. I can't see going back to engineering pretty much ever. So I plan to die at the keyboard. That's my current plan.
So. Oh, I like that. I'm kind of hoping that by the time we are older, you know, as the technology changes, there won't be keyboards, that somehow there will be a better technology so I don't get RSI anymore.
Yeah, no, I vote for that. Absolutely.
I can see that in our future. But in your book, The Indie Author Survival Guide, which is brilliant and why I invited you on the show, so you have this thing which I love. You know, we hear of all the breakout indie stars and the truly amazing sales, and we can't all be Hugh Howey and lots of people in the romance niche, for example. But you say in the book, and I quote, indie mid-listers are the heart of the indie revolution. So I wondered if you could explain what that means. You know, what is a mid-lister for indie and why are they the heart?
Okay, well, first of all, my definition of an indie mid-list is someone who's making a living with their books. And a living can vary a lot all over. So I would say whatever the average income is in your area, if you're making more than that, technically you're making a living. And I think that the people that can do that with their stories are the heart of the revolution because they are the example of how you can actually do it. We can't all be Hugh Howie. We might all want to be Hugh Howie, but and those kinds of breakout stars are very inspirational. Right now, I'm so inspired by Andy Weir and his, you know, novel The Martian that's being made into a movie. It's like, that stuff is great, and I love it. But not everybody's going to be that, just by definition. And so the question is, can you still make a living at it, even if you're not a rock star? And I think people like myself who are doing that, I don't have to evangelize. I don't have to go out there and sell people on indie publishing. The mere fact that I am making a living at it every day is a great example. And people noticed that. And I think when that actually started to happen is when the indie revolution took off, because word got around. People saw those examples and they were like, hey, I can do it too. And you can. You absolutely, for the first time in, I don't know, probably forever, there's a real chance for a lot of people to make a living with their art, at least the written art. And I just love that. I think it's a fantastic time to be a writer.
What about the, I guess, the impatience, you know, because I know you have a lot of books, and I know people think, oh, I just put out a book and then da-da, you know, it works. What can people think about in terms of timing and also the comparisonitis issue?
Right. Well, there will always be somebody who's going to be better than you at everything, making more money, writing a better book, being more productive, you know, getting more words out. Any kind of comparison you want to make is very toxic, because it takes you out of that place where you're actually being productive, where you're actually doing the work. And I think if you're committed to doing the work, first of all, that's the reward in and of itself. Okay, regardless of sales, just the fact that you are actually writing books and out and putting yourself out there and doing this creative thing. So there's that. But second of all, you need to have a plan going into this that is somewhat reasonable. When I first started out, my first objective with my first indie book was to break even. That was my goal. And, you know, I had other goals beyond that. But the first one was breaking even, because I knew if I couldn't do that, we might have some trouble. And that would be my first, you know, guidepost of whether this was even possible to do. So, but beyond that, and the second part that I think is actually really important is for people to commit that they're doing this. Don't dip your toe in with one short story and then declare it a failure because it didn't get you on the New York Times bestseller list. I mean, obviously I'm exaggerating, but people do have somewhat unrealistic expectations sometimes. And they look at the superstars, and they think, oh, I can do that with my first book. And that's really not reasonable. But if you commit yourself to writing a trilogy, because a series are huge in our business, write the trilogy, publish the trilogy, get it out there, give yourself a year to do that. If you can do that within a year and do everything that you're supposed to do in terms of having a good book, having a good product, see how it hits the market, you will know. You will have a good idea after a year whether you can make it in this biz, or at least you will have a whole ton of information about why you didn't. Mm. And then you can decide, well, is this something I want to keep trying at? Because I firmly believe that failure is something we do while we're trying, and success is something we do when we try again. So, you know, you have to decide for yourself whether you want to keep going with it, but give yourself time to find success. Don't give up too soon.
Mm. And I think those unrealistic expectations of sort of write one book and make a million, you know, and then retire does really come from the dream and the myth of the traditional publishing industry. And you have another great line in the book. It says, the radical nature of indie publishing is that it shines a spotlight on the big lie. So talk a bit about what the big lie is and why that's still something we're interested in.
Well, there's a lot of pieces to what you just said. So let me unpack that a little bit. First of all, the big lie is that if you don't get a contract with a traditional publisher, that you're some kind of hack. Okay. And there are indie published authors on the bestseller list every day demolishing that lie. It is just simply not true that you're no good and you can't sell books if you don't have a contract. It's just simply not true. It took a while for people to figure that out. And it took some time for that to flip over to being just painfully obvious to everyone. Okay, so it's kind of like the big lie that nobody even really believes anymore. A few people do. If you're not knowledgeable about the industry, if you don't know what's been going on, you might still believe it. But even people in the industry don't believe it anymore. So that's good. I think that's a good thing. But part of why we wanted to believe the lie is because it gives validation. So what publishers historically have done is dole out that validation. They peddled validation. Okay, so if you got that stamp of approval, you knew you had made it. Now, never mind, and part of their process that also fed into this one book, and I'm now a best-selling author, New York Times lister, was actually the way that traditional publishing worked, in that they took a big chance on you with your one book that they plucked out of the many, many, and they were going to make you a star. And they were going to do that by having a big push right in the beginning, have you climb up those bestseller charts and hopefully become this sort of overnight success. So that model was built into the expectation of what the golden ring was. If you could catch it, that was going to be your reward. Now, never mind that for most traditionally published authors, that isn't what happened, okay? Because either they decided you weren't the star, but they were going to try to publish you anyway, or, you know, things just didn't work out. But that's still sort of out there as this ideal that perhaps we want to go reach for. But the reality is that, excuse me, the reality is that publishers don't control that stamp of approval. The readers do. And that all they ever really controlled was distribution, which they no longer control. And so now you have writers out there floating in this free market, selling their books, maybe not. And they don't know, am I any good? I want someone to tell me I'm good. And that whole need for approval, I look at that as sort of a part of the path that a lot of artists go through. I think we start out from that point where we are new in craft and young in craft, and we don't know if we're any good. And at some point, as you mature, you develop the ability for self-criticism, self-reflection. You know whether you're relatively speaking good or not good, whatever that actually means. Because I don't even like having that kind of terminology. But more importantly, I think you discover that it doesn't matter. Because what really matters is that you're creating. You're telling stories that you need to tell. And you have that creative fulfillment that goes along with that. And if you're doing that, it doesn't actually matter if people read it or love it or buy it or review it, or all of that is a separate process from the creative part. And the people who can stay the most in that, I think, are the happiest with their writing, you know, and then you have to deal with all the other part of it, but that doesn't go away. But, you know, just making those distinct helps with the need for approval. Not for everyone. Everyone's going to have their own approach to this. So, you know, hey, if you want approval from a traditional publisher, go for that. Make that happen for yourself, because that will make you happy. And I'm all for you being happy with whatever it is you want to reach for.
So then, I mean, you talked about validation, about what various people might want. And I mean, I talk a lot about this definition of success and how it differs for everyone. But you have this thing about the mission statement in the book, which I really like, and thinking about what's important. Can you explain about this mission statement and how they can put one together?
Okay. Well, a mission statement for a writer is no different than any other organization. You can Google how to write mission statements, but it's just a short paragraph that really distills down your core values. And, you know, it might be ridiculed a little bit in business speak because it's been overdone or whatever, but it's an exercise for you as a writer to say, what am I in this for? Because I think even though we're writers, we don't actually sit down and write why we write. And we don't really examine that always. We might have a feel for it. We might be like, I've always written stories, I'm compelled to write stories, something like that. But to really define it, really put it into words, I think helps to clarify our thinking. And so for me, I actually had several different pieces to it. One piece had to do with why I write stories. And I'll just read a little part of it. It's basically to create compelling stories and characters that pose moral questions to readers and make them think. So that sort of gives you an idea that I like thinking stories. And that's, I'm going to prod my readers to think about why, you know, our characters are in these situations and what the moral choices are there. So that's important to me. But then I also had other pieces to it. Like I wanted every story to be an improvement in craft. I wanted to be a leader and a member of the writing community. That was an important part to me. And this book that I've written, all of my nonfiction works, The Indie Author Guide, plus the one I'm writing right now, For Love or Money, those are part of me being part of the writer community. It's not like I'm making a business out of those so much as that's part of my giving back. And that's important to me. It's fulfilling to me to do that, which is why I do it. And it's in my mission statement, so I guess I better. And the last piece of it was that I wanted to create a large body of works to reach a large number of readers. But I also wanted to leverage technology. Like the technology piece was important to me. The innovation that comes with storytelling and with form, with serials or novels or whatever. And so that piece was important to me to be in my mission statement that sort of gives me permission to explore all those aspects. Hmm. So I think when you put it together, it kind of gives you a snapshot of who you are as a writer. And that helps you when you come and have to make decisions like, I've got a big publisher coming and asking if I want a contract. Where does that fit in my mission statement? Hmm. And it's just a tool for writers to use.
I know, I think it's a really good one. And just a couple of things on mine, you know, freedom is the one word that I always use as the value guidance. It's like, does this give me more freedom or less freedom? So like, I do print on demand. I don't have stock books in my house because we don't own anything. That's how I choose to live. So, you know, that's one thing. And then like you, I have on my wall, you know, create a body of work that I'm proud of. And another thing on there, and I rarely talk about this, but I did use an unknown pen name for something else, you know, as many of us do. And then yes. I decided I didn't want to do that anymore because I want to have this body of work I'm proud of that I can put my name to. So for me, that was a decision that I wouldn't write under that third pen name anymore. So I just used my two big ones. And that was, like you say, it was a decision based on this sort of overarching reasons why. There's perhaps an ego element in there, but there's nothing wrong with ego, right?
Oh, absolutely not. And I mean, you should have that this is, you know, creatively fulfilling is another name for ego. Mm. You know, and I think that's a very legitimate part of why we write. And whatever it is, and I want to emphasize that I don't care what you put in your mission statement, you know, be honest, please, because you are the only one who knows what will make you happy. Mm. And if you climb the wrong mountain and keep striving for something that you think everybody else thinks you should do, you get there, you'll spend all this time and you'll end up not happy. And I don't want that. I want people to be fulfilled in their work. So, you know, I love that you did that experiment though, where you went and you tried it because sometimes we don't know. Mm. And, you know, so we try something on for size and we go, nope, that doesn't fit me now. And then you're okay with letting it go. And you've answered that question now. You don't have to go back and do it again because it won't be always looming out there taunting you and saying, you should try this. You know, I'm a sucker for that. It's like, I have to try all the things because that's who I am. I'm an experimentalist. Mm. And once I try it, I'm okay with letting it go because it didn't work or embracing it if it did, even though if that surprises me.
Yeah. So I think that's really important. And also, you know, we're creating a life, not just another job. You know, if people do want to leave their day job to become a full-time author entrepreneur, you have to design the life you want, not just something that you end up hating because you're writing something you don't love. So I think that's so important. Now, one thing I wanted to ask you about was this fear of judgment, because it's something that I definitely have, the sort of, I really want people to like me. And when I, one of my series, the London Psychic series, it was a bit darker and I was a bit worried I was very worried what people would think of me, you know, that the stuff that comes out of our brains. And you talk about the fear of judgment in your book. So maybe you could comment on that.
Yeah, I think we have a lot of fears. We have like a basket full of fears as writers. And fear of judgment is definitely one of them. And it holds us back because it keeps us from really exploring all the potential that our story has. And that is what really hooks readers. So you've got to go there. But conquering that fear is sometimes really tough. And I don't think I'm not an advocate of just pushing through fear, because I think not addressing your fears is a way to just sort of bury them, and they're going to come back and bite you at the worst possible time. So, you know, deal with them so that you can move forward with confidence and clarity of what you're doing. I have a webinar, a 30-minute webinar on facing your fears on my website, which I hope people will check out, just because I've gotten a lot of feedback from people saying that it's very useful to them. But one of the main points in that is that you need to take some kind of action in the face of fear. Fear is doing one thing. It's telling you that you're probably tackling something worthwhile, and that you're also being vulnerable in the world. You know, we look at other people, and when they make themselves vulnerable in the world, we go, wow, they're so courageous, and we're so inspired by them. But when it's us, we're like, no, thank you, because that makes me vulnerable, and I don't like that. You know, so getting through that feeling of discomfort that comes from being vulnerable, which is exactly what you need to do, okay, is difficult. And one of the things that can help is taking some kind of creative action, or any action at all that addresses the fear. And that fear is an anticipatory emotion. It's something in the future that we think might happen. All right. So if we're taking action in today, in the present, it diffuses, it takes us, pulls us back out of the future into the moment today, where we're doing something concrete. And that has this really calming effect on the mind. And especially when we're taking creative action, like writing or researching or doing something like that, it really dissolves those fears away. And, you know, they might come back, but you can keep, it's a constant battle. You're going to have to keep fighting it. But there are tools to fight it. So
yeah. And I think with that, you know, you really have to get down to, well, what is the worst thing that can happen as an author? I mean, really, like, if you get a 1-star review, or, you know, for me, I think we worry most about our family and friends, you know. So my mother-in-law said, why can't I write something nice? And my mum said, why don't I write like Hilary Mantel, who's like an award-winning historical literary fiction author. And, you know, I think we worry about that, like the fear of judgment by the people who know us. But you have to, my number one thing now is, don't expect your family and friends to like anything you write.
Right. Well, and they're not your audience, exactly. Most likely, right? I mean, you aren't even actually writing for them. And, you know, I'm lucky to have a lot of support in my family, but I understand that fear. And it's, you know, what we're risking is we're risking our connection with people. That's when we're vulnerable, we're risking connection. And one of the people I quote in the webinar was a lady whose name is escaping me, but she was a TED talker. And she was talking about how she did all these studies, and she found that the people who risk the most, who are the most risking of that connection, actually had the most fulfilling connections with people in their lives. So even though your mother might say, why can't you be like this person? You know, that is, you know, you're going to have a relationship with that person that's going to be defined by a whole lot more than the fact that you're not writing the books. But there's probably some part of her that, you know, recognizes that you took a risk to do something that wasn't, you know, admit whether they ever actually get to that point or not. Your creative work is important to you. It's intrinsic to you. And just as she has her work and it's intrinsic to her, you know, and you're not going to judge her for doing or not doing whatever she's doing or not doing with her life. You know, it's those connections are defined by a lot more than just our work. And if we hold back from our work, we're going to be punishing. She's going to spend like 2% of her life worrying about what you write, but you're going to be spending 100% of your time worrying about what you write. And so you need to go there first. You need to take care of your own creativity and need to write. And not let the fear keep you from doing what you can be as a writer, because I can guarantee you that the guy who wrote the literary novel was not holding back. Okay, that guy was going where he needed to go with his work, and that's what you need to do too. So that's what I would say.
Fantastic. Okay, so you have a lot of books out. You know, you're a mature indie now. You've been doing this for a number of years, and you've done loads of marketing tactics as well. Like we, you know, like you and I both, we just try everything. So after all your experience, what are your kind of top recommendations for book marketing? You know, what should people definitely be doing?
Well, you know, I hate to make pronouncements like that because it's really individual and there's a huge genre effect. Like if you're writing thrillers versus romance versus science fiction, you really have very different markets. But that being said, I use a lot of ads. I do a lot of paid advertising because it's sort of a broad reach approach. And I trust it to pull in the kind of readers. I also use free books. I have two free books right now because they're in different genres. And that's sort of a 24/7 marketing thing. You know, since Kindle Unlimited came along last summer, the effect of PermaFree is not as strong as it used to be, but it's still cheap and easy. And it, more importantly, it doesn't take any time. And a lot of your time needs to be doing the one thing that you really can do to increase your career, which is write another book and get another out in the series and be, you know, cohesive with what you're writing so that you're building a body of works that actually kind of goes together and you can build your audience that way. So those are the three big things. I would say ads, a free book, and just writing the next book, having production, getting your production up, are three things that really are the fundamentals. If you don't have at least some of those that you're using at some point along the way, you're not tapping into all your potential.
And on a question on the series thing, I mean, I know some people get worried at a series. So say you have three books in a series and you're still not making a lot of sales, which is happening to some people, you know. Is it just that they haven't found the right audience yet, for example? Or how would you diagnose that problem?
Actually, I'm writing a whole book about that problem right now called For Love or Money. And part of it, when I look at whether a book is selling, say you've written a book for love, okay? You love it. You love the story, the characters. This is the book of your heart, okay? But it's not reaching an audience. It's not selling. Why? It's either the appeal of the book or it's your craft. And nobody wants to hear that it's your craft, okay? But it's possible it's your craft just because you might have a great idea for a story, but if you can't deliver that in a way that really is going to hook readers in, then they're not going to stick with you to see how it all unfolds. Okay, so every one of us, and I mean, I'm constantly trying to take my craft up a level, so it's not like, you know, you get to here and you're good enough. It's like there's always a spectrum of where you can constantly be improving. So everyone should be doing that anyway. But it's possible you haven't quite reached the level yet where readers are just grabby hands with your book and just can't, you know, devour it fast enough. You want to get to that level to really sell. But a huge part of it, I think, is appeal. And I think people discount that. They think, well, I'm writing in a popular genre. It's thrillers or whatever. But you may not realize that your idea of what a thriller is isn't what a lot of the thriller readers are looking for. And they have some very specific genre-specific things, types of characters, types of storylines that they want to read. And, you know, it's not your fault and it's not their fault. It's just is. It is just how the market works. And so if you have this sort of off the beaten path story, it may not be resonating with the huge numbers of readers. So that means either you can bring your story in closer to the mainstream. That's one option. Another option is to, you're just going to have to work a lot harder to find those readers who really get your story. You know, they're out there, but they're smaller in number. And so you're going to have to really think about, who am I actually targeting this book towards? Who is the audience for this book? And then go find them. So it's more effort, it's more marketing, and it's more, you know, maybe more effort than you want to put in, because marketing can take a lot of time and it can take time away from writing, which is the thing that we all like to do, because it's not like we got into this because we like to market. We got in this because we like to write.
Yeah, exactly. And I think you're right. I mean, I struggle. My London Psychic series, for example, I have now discovered after ages of like, why isn't this hitting the right thing? They have a subcategory for psychics in print books, but not in Kindle. And this is the thing, right now, there are some disconnects between where you can put various books in subcategories. And for many, you know, for many authors, there isn't a specific subcategory. But what I think is that over time, more and more, more, these things will become more granular. So it's like if things aren't hitting as you would hope, you know, and you're getting good reviews, which would prove the craft point from the people who do find the book, but it's not, the sales aren't amazing, give it time, you know, don't give up.
Right, don't give up. And that's the whole don't give up too soon thing. I have a whole chapter in my book about that too, because you need to let it go through its paces. You need to write the whole trilogy. You need to experiment with free and pricing and a bunch of stuff before you give up on the series. So, and I have a couple of series that don't sell as well as my main series, which sells very well because it's pretty well targeted to the market. And in my book, I really break that down. It's like, this is why this hits the market. This is why this one doesn't. And it's not because, I mean, it's the same author. And I actually think that the ones that aren't hitting the market are better written because they came later in my career, right? So it's not the quality of the craft necessarily, but hitting the market is huge. And people don't, you know, you'll hear a marketing technique that someone is using. You really need to ask, what genre of book are you talking about? Because what works in romance will not work for thrillers. There's some that will cross over, some techniques like, you know, an ad or something like that will cross over, a free book. I say those things because they're generic. They work for everybody. But there are specific marketing things, ways of marketing for romance that are very specific to that audience. Mm-hmm. That audience has a way of interacting with their readers or their authors that is very different than the thriller market. So you have to know more about your market, and that's the business side. And that's actually for the For Love or Money book, I'm hoping will demystify a little bit of the market and how it works for people. So they can decide where they want to spend their efforts. You know, do I want to take a pen name and do something that makes more money? Or do I want to stick with my For Love books and just enjoy them, but maybe nudge them a little closer to what the market is looking for? Or maybe I really need to invest in my craft. Maybe I really just need to take that up a huge level because I'm just not delivering the kind of stories that make readers just salivate over, you know, and we all want that. We want readers to salivate over our books. So we should be constantly trying for that.
Yeah, definitely. And we have to keep that kind of creative integrity as well, you know, in terms of if something's burning and you really want to write that story, then write that story. And this is the thing, it could hit in 5 years' time, in 10 years' time. It's what I love about this game, right? I mean,
yes, absolutely.
These books can earn us money for the rest of our life and 70 years after we die. And I heard Anne Rice, you know, who wrote the vampire books, years, and she said in her lifetime, she's in her 80s, I think, that vampire craze has come around three times, as in she's made all that money three times so far with the vampire crazes, and then, you know, that will be passed. Maybe she'll get another one before her end. But this is the thing, even if it doesn't hit in month one or year one, you know, don't think about that. Think about 10 years' time, maybe.
Right. Or even the long tail, because even if it's not hitting a huge bestseller, but it's slowly giving you, you know, so much money per month, you know, you make $100 a month off it. Well, that's $100 that you know, wouldn't have had otherwise. And that adds up over time because you're just going to keep writing more books.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. If you do, you know, there's a lot of people that don't. They try their one or their two or three and then they quit. You know, so the only time you actually fail as an indie author is when you quit. Because then you've stopped the production and you only ever have those books that are out there. And sometimes people pull them down. Mm. They're like, I'm done and I'm out. And it's like, well, okay. But
I think on that though, I would disagree that that's necessarily a failure. I used to think that this was the right thing for everybody, but I now realize that not everybody can do this life and not everybody wants to. So I think it's absolutely right to give up if you decide that this is just like a job, you know. But obviously you and I and a lot of many others love this stuff. We love it, right? We absolutely love it.
Absolutely. And I agree with you that I shouldn't have used that word failure. I was sort of pushing that against, like, if you stop trying, only failing as an indie author, because being an indie author, you're right, is not for everyone. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there are some people that really need to have that traditional contract because that's in their mission statement. That's in their goals, you know, and so they need to go for that. Or some people really just need to write for themselves and they really don't want to have that, you know, interaction with the public. They don't want to have it out there because it's so intensely personal for them. You know, so there's a million varieties of why people write. And I want them to do all of them. I want them to do whatever is right for them.
Yeah,
so agreed. 100% I agree with that.
So just on the back on the marketing, you have a brilliant post on using Scrivener for organizing your marketing, which I have now stolen and have just started my Scrivener file on marketing. Can you explain that? Because it's very useful.
Well, Scrivener is a writing tool, but I actually don't use it for writing. I use it for organizing my research and for organizing, as you say, my marketing. Basically, it just has folders and subfolders, and you can put anything in there, whether it's links or images or text. And I use it to keep track of what ads I've run and what their success was. And I've got so many different like series going at once because I'm this like crazy writer that I like write all over the place. So I've got all these different genres going, and trying to keep track of each of those independently, make sure they're heading in the right direction, see if, you know, how long has it been since I ran a sale or an ad or something in that, you know, in that series. And what can I do to analyze it? Like, say, when Kindle Unlimited changes their thing from a per borrow to per read, like they're doing right now, you know, I've got a wide variety of serials and novels and things. And so I really need, it kind of keeps it all together. So I can really in one shot, open it up, look at it, organize, and then put it away. Because that's part of what, like, tears down my personal productivity is constantly worrying about the marketing. And if I can do, I sort of segment it out, like I'm doing marketing now and then put that away and then do writing. And keeping those separate really helps me stay on track. And knowing that everything is in one file helps me do that separation better. So.
Yeah, I must say that's really helped me because I just, you know, I love all the marketing stuff, you know, like you do. And I love finding all these new things. But the trouble is, as you say, you're like, okay, well, now I should do Pinterest images or now I should do this. Whereas saving all the ideas, as you say, like going, that's a great idea, I'll put it in my folder, and then visiting it regularly. You know, like right. One discovers new websites to do ads on all the time, right? You know,
right.
And new things are appearing all the time, and it's really important to keep track of these. You know, things like audiobook marketing barely started, really, hasn't it? I mean, audiobook is so new that type of thing, you know, there'll be more and more. And then per country, you know, there are different blogs, you know, in Germany, for example, versus the US versus the UK. And yeah, I don't know how you've meant to keep it in track unless you organize it as you've done.
Right. And I had sort of an organizational technique before, but it was just much more scattered, and Scrivener is really built for doing that. It's a very inexpensive program for what it delivers and enables, and some people get very intimidated by it because it has a lot of bells and whistles. So in my post I talked about just do the tutorial. There's like a 5-minute tutorial that will get you started, and that's like all you really need. And once you're started, then, you know, if you really want to dive into all the details about how to use it, there's more tutorials for that, but you don't have to do that. You can get started pretty quick and easy.
I agree. Okay, so briefly, just you've mentioned it a little bit, but just tell us a bit more about the For Love or Money, Crafting an Indie Author Career. And of course, I've got to ask you, is it love or money for you?
Okay, well, it is both. It is both. I definitely write for love with my Susan K. Quinn books. But I also have a pen name, which I do strictly for money. And it was sort of an experiment to see if I could do it. And the money doesn't actually go to me. So I have my little special cause that I give my money to, which has been freeing in a way, because I think you can kind of get trapped. Like if you get very successful with your for money books, it can be very hard to justify going back and writing those other books that don't make as much money, but that you love. So the book talks a lot about all of that, the full spectrum of everything from how writing for love is so fundamental to who we are as writers and how it really helps us become the writer that we can be, all the way up to if you're going to go strictly mercenary, completely write for money. And what does it look like to do that? And, you know, and I did do that. And my pen name is doing quite well, and she's making, you know, a living all by herself, which is wonderful. So it's quite possible to do. And I learned a lot from doing it. The lessons that I learned about marketing and about different genres and and even about myself as a writer, were very powerful lessons that I could then bring back to my For Love books. So it was a very interesting experiment for me personally. And so the book is very much about those two ends, but also how to find it somewhere in the middle. You know, how to take your books that you've written for love, how can we make them a little more commercial so you can get those sales and have, hopefully be able to make a living with your craft, doing things that you love and not necessarily having to do things for money. So I try to break down a little bit of our biases and preconceived notions about a lot of that and really take an honest approach to what are your options today. Because it wasn't always an option to do this, right? One of the things that's great about indie is that you can write it and publish it like that. I mean, just do it and it is out. If you've literally got an idea this week, you can publish it next week if you can get it written. You know, well, there's no limit.
Funny you say that, because we're recording in the afternoon. This morning, I just published a new book.
And congratulations.
I already got the notification that they're up and ready. You know, it's just like... This is crazy. It used to take like 4 hours or whatever. Now it barely takes an hour to publish a book.
I know. Crazy. It is crazy. It is crazy. And the cool thing about it is it has turned it into a truly free market. So whatever readers are reading today that love today, if you can write it, you can give it to them. You know, and it doesn't have to be, you know, that sexy romance with werewolves or whatever, you know. It can be a NASA space adventure to capitalize on The Martian coming out, you know, or it can be the latest thriller to capitalize on whatever the latest thriller thing is. You know, there's a flexibility that comes with having that speed that I think writers are capitalizing on. They're starting to do. And so it's bringing them closer to the market, because there's this relationship between writers and readers that there's nothing else in between them anymore. We can just write it and they read it. And just as fast as I can write it, they can read it. And it's fantastic. So I love that part of it.
I love it too. We live in very exciting times.
Definitely.
We do. So tell us, where can people find you and your books online?
Okay. Well, all my books are on Amazon for sure. And I have a website, SusanKayQuinn.com. It's K-A-Y-E in the middle. And all my stuff is there. I also have a blog, which you can get to from my website. And on my blog has a page for writers, which has my webinars and a bunch of blog posts that I've written over time, because I've been blogging through this whole time that I've been indie publishing. And there's some useful stuff in there, like the Scrivener post and other things. So there's a lot of useful information for writers, and I hope that will help them. And I hope this podcast helped them a little bit on their journey, because it's one of the things I love about the writing community for indies, especially. We're so open with all the things that we've learned, and we're always trying to build each other up. And I love that. So
yeah, I love that too. Well, thanks so much for coming on the show, Susan. That was great.
Thanks so much for having me.
Thanks for listening today. I hope you found it helpful. You might also like the backlist episodes at thecreativepen.com/podcasts. You can also get your free author 2.0 blueprint at thecreativepen.com/blueprint. If you'd like to connect, you can tweet me at thecreativepen or find me on Facebook at thecreativepen. See you next time.